It's noon. It's Tuesday. That means we welcome in our friend Tommy Curran, Patriots insider of NBC Sports Boston, here with Gresh and Fourier. Tommy, good afternoon. How are you?
Hello, boys. What a beautiful Tuesday we have.
Very much so. And you're getting to see the Jimmys and Joes kind of run around out there a little bit. Tommy, I'm just curious as to what looks different, what stands out to you. You've got eyes on the ground down there. What's it all look like at the operation under Gerard Mayo?
It looked crisp. I was standing with Phil Perry, and he said, you know, it looks like they know where they're supposed to go and what they're supposed to do. And, you know, I covered the NFL, the league itself, for 3 or 4 years when I was at NBC. And I remember remarking, as I used to watch other teams' practices, they kind of just wander around. They don't have any particular purpose in between drills. This looked good in that respect. So that's encouraging. You can see a little bit with the run game stuff, what they're trying to implement, a little bit more wide zone. You're seeing a little bit more of the sprint out stuff being asked of the quarterbacks, turn their back to the line of scrimmage, working on footwork. But again, this is just, as you know, and as everybody listening knows who likes football, this is totally the install period. It's the first day of orientation, basically showing people where you're going to be and how you're going
to
do it.
Yeah, that's why I feel like it's kind of hard to kind of, you know, figure out exactly how things are going to go when camp starts, official camp starts. But so correct me if I'm wrong. Is Mayo not really coaching a position, not leaning offense heavy, defense heavy? Is he just kind of wandering from, you know, position to position? And if there is a team period, which side of the ball is he hanging out on?
A little more offense just on yesterday, but certainly more of an overseeing type situation, which, you know, is inherent around the league. Again, that's what head coaches do. They let their position coaches coach, and they wander and oversee and then take the info back. Now, I think that because Bill would be hands-on in different capacities, a lot of that was forced by a lack of coaches. They just didn't have the numbers. For instance, Bill's assisting with the offensive line the last 2 years was necessitated by the fact, especially in 22, they had Billy Yates and Matt Patricia. Finally said, Matt, you have to go full-time offense. We can't split this. So Bill picked up more of the offensive line. Same thing existed last year. He wasn't really in defensive meetings at all, Bill. He was more with the offense and the offensive line. So what you ideally want, I think, is the head coach to be an overseer, supervisor, leader. I mean, Bear Bryant coached from a friggin' tower. That's kind of, I'm not saying that's what you need to do, but coaches, head coaches are generally.
Yeah, so did Don James. There's a lot of them. Those old timers,
yeah.
They just like yelling from the tower with their megaphone. That old way. Kind of like the old way, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear the comments of Keon White, Tommy, because it was the acknowledgement of the Bill way, the acknowledgement of the Mayo way. But the one thing I found interesting about Keon White's comments was just don't be a phony, because I'll sniff out a phony. And even though he said nice things about both head coaches, it's interesting that that was the statement that for me I really took away from that, because it is something that the players are going to be doing. I talked to Fourier about it a little bit. You're kind of like feeling out the coaches as you sort of go along through this process as well.
Yeah, I talked to Mayo about that actually last week for a little bit. Players are attuned to how they're being treated, but if you're going to ask about their family, you better listen to the answer. You know, I think we all know people, hey, how's your family? And they don't listen. Don't ask if you don't really want to know. And I think that's an interesting, as Mayo talks about understanding and understanding what people are about and how their lives are and how that informs the employee that you have at the office. It's important to make sure that you're sincere about it, which I think the guy has been over the course of time. You know, Keon White's out there phony stiffing. Good luck. You'll probably find plenty of them that fit your description of it. But I think that, you know, it's definitely a line to toe, because if you're trying to reinvent yourself and be something that you haven't been, you're constantly on audition with yourself. So just be who you are. and it'll make things easier for you because you'll know how to respond when something happens instead of saying, how's this guy supposed to respond? I'm not sure.
So we're talking to Tom E. Kern. And Tom, just off of the Keon White conversation, how much interaction have you had with him?
Limited.
I think
a little bit last year at a blocker.
I feel like he's like going to be, I think, one of my favorite players. I feel like he's a little nutty in like a good way. As far as like guys having a breakout season, your thoughts on, you know, him being a potential candidate?
Yeah, I think he's unbelievable. We saw it really in the preseason. Remember how he was manhandling people in the preseason? So he's a tremendous, and I'm really interested to see what his role is because he's not as much an edge guy. He's kind of an interior guy, kicks outside a little bit as a pass rusher, but he is, I mean, he was walking off the field yesterday and I looked at his quads as he's coming up. I'm like, my God, those are just insanely big. It's just insanely huge. It's just a really impressive size and power guy. So I think Keon White, I think their entire front seven is pretty stocked with guys that we don't talk about a lot because of guys who rose last year, like Tavai and Anfernee Jennings. We look at Judon as a guy who's a little older, and he is a key component of their defense, but I think that they have great depth and talent in their front seven that really didn't develop a ton and then took big leaps last year.
Tommy, I know that Gerard Mayo mentioned a couple of things about the quarterbacks, and one of them was the job is open, the number one job. Your thoughts on that? I think you and I are sharing a brain. And also the line about wanting to go into camp with three. So are Joe Milton and Bailey Zappe fighting for a spot now, or will be fighting for a spot through minicamp? I'm curious for your thoughts on both those things.
Yeah, I think the default for the Patriots right now is, you can say it's an open competition, but the default is what the depth chart is going to look like probably after 1 week of camp. It's going to be Jacoby Brissett at the top, then Drake May, then Joe Milton. And my guess is if you want to go with three quarterbacks, you would go with the three that you brought in yourself, which would be May, Brissett, and Milton. And you look at Bailey Zappe, and physically he is a head shorter than these guys. The arm strength is palpably different than these guys. He just does not fit the suit the way the other guys do. And I think you definitely, as we saw yesterday, pay respect to the fact that he's a veteran, the fact that he's made contributions, the fact that he's been a good teammate and soldiered on through what was a kind of a bleak season last year, the last two. And you also want the reps to look good. So give Bailey Zappe the second most reps so that the other 21 guys on the field are getting something out of it. But that can't go on for much longer, I would think.
Yeah, you know, and just real quick for my next question, just because we had a little discussion about Bailey Zappe, and yeah, he probably isn't on this team, but do you think he has a place on somebody else's roster based on what you just mentioned, just his overall real game time experience?
If you go back to 2022, you'd say, yeah, oh, wow, look at this kid. He's really efficient. And then you look at 2023, and there were so many throws and decisions and incompletions and interceptions that you say, I don't know if he can really – is he a developmental guy, or is he a guy who's content to come in here and be a backup and put his hands at 10-2? I think here he certainly has or had aspirations of being the starter right up until draft night. He hoped that the Patriots would, you know, not take a quarterback and entrust him and Jacoby Brissett to be the quarterbacks. That didn't happen. So what does the rest of the league view Bailey Zappe as? He looks in the mirror and sees a potential starter in the NFL because he has done so. No one can take those away from him, but I just don't know if the rest of the league is going to look at him the same way.
So the other part, sorry, Gresh, do they need to re-sign Judon? What's going to happen with him? I feel like that's another contract issue arising with him.
Yeah, he's making $6.5 million in base salary. And really, last year, they didn't give him a raise. They borrowed from 2024 and put that money into last season. So, again, they're kind of looking at a situation where he's underpaid relative to what other number one edge rushers on their particular teams get. So he's underpaid will they have to do something? I'm certain that he would prefer an extension as opposed to merely a bump. So you have to split hairs on that and say, well, what are you right now? You're a player who is explosive when on the field, but toward the end of the season, the last couple of years, your performance has petered off or you've been unavailable. And that's tough to break to a guy when they are as productive as he can be when he's good. One interesting aspect of this, too, I think that didn't exist when you were playing, certainly, Christian, is with his platform, he is the most optimistic, outgoing, brand-promoting Patriot there is. What value is there in that? What value is there in that if it goes away? What detriment is there if he says, you know what, I'm going to turn the needle the other way? So I think all of that plays into decision-making, at least factoring it in. You know, you can't say, well, we got to pay this guy another $3 million because he's awesome on Instagram and Twitter. But
well, can I answer that real quick? What I think the social media, angle is worth? Zero. I don't know.
But the dynamic has to play to an extent with the team because it's a component of being a leader.
Maybe you're right. Hey, listen, leaders, you know, push out team propaganda. I would still say ultimately in the big scheme of what's important, because we were doing a whole thing of what's really important, zero importance. Totally. Zero. I would say if my choice was between two guys and they were both the same type of talent and provided the same amount of, production, I would not lean towards the guy that has a big social media following over the guy that has zero. Personally.
Yeah, and it's not a following. I guess I want to put a finer point on this so it makes sense. When the Patriots sucked last year, Matt Judon was the one who'd go to the podium and say, we're not a bad team. Whether he was accurate or not, that's beside the point. But in terms of leadership and optimism and that he brings to the team, the Patriots do place a value on what you bring to the team off the field, whether it's Slater, McCourty, you, whoever. So I think it's interesting. It's just something different that you have to look at in 2024. You're not going to say, well, if he had more followers, we'd be able to give him more money. That's not the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, no, I get it now.
He's an outwardly good leader in an avenue that didn't exist. Do you think about that?
I think you have to, and you also kind of need a team spokesman who will stand up there and fling poo even though you're standing with boots on. And when you think about the real veteran guys now, a lot of them are on defense. You have Andrews on offense, and then you kind of start to whittle down the dudes that have been here who would be team spokesmen on top of all that other stuff that you referenced as well, Tommy. And there's the whole, how quickly do they want to turn the page on certain people and try to get younger? Like, the one thing we don't know, or the one thing that I admit I'm struggling with, Tommy, is how aggressive will Elliot Wolf and Gerard Mayo be at just saying, put the young ones in and let them learn? Or do they go, let's maybe slow down a little bit on some of these young guys and give them a chance to learn before we put them in there?
That's a great question. That's something that Elliot Wolf addressed at the owners' meetings and said, we intend to play young players. That's part of the philosophy that I have. Let young players play. And you might say, well, why isn't Drake May out there? I think that's a horse of a different color.
Agreed.
When you're talking quarterback, because you can hold everybody's performance hostage at quarterback if you put somebody out there way before they're ready. But their philosophy seems to be, at least articulated by Wolf, in March, we're going to play the young players.
Yep, and then there's June, July, and August, baby. Here we go. We are running downhill. Yes, folks.
And real quickly, what's Troy Brown's role on the team? Does he have a title?
Yes, he does. He does. I will text it to you after we finish. It's kind of an overseer, supervisory, ball handling type role, but I'll text the specific.
Okay.
Title that he has.
So it's got a multi. He has a multi-word title. He's now gone to the bigger business card.
Which
Troy Brown
really means he doesn't really have a role, but they love him so much they want him to stick around. It's kind of what I get from it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm glad for him. I'm glad he's still involved.
Tommy, thank you, friend. We appreciate it. We'll catch you on Jones and Mego on Thursday. Thank you.
All right, guys. Have a great week.
There we go. Tom. You too. There goes Tom Curran.